Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to On the Bench. I am Brendan Sinone, joined by Chris Nee, Josh Newberg. This is On the Bench. I already said that, though, didn't I? But I want people to know that this is On the Bench. I've said it three times now. On the Bench, one more time. All right, so today we are going to play a game of Buy or Sinone, and it's going to be hopefully a longer version of Buy or Sinone. Josh forced me to ask the Buy or Sinone questions for this one because he wasn't really feeling what the listeners were putting down the last couple days. Oh, is that not accurate, Joshua?
I had no input on this episode. You just asked me to come along because typically this is the Chris Nee and Brendan Sinone preview pod, and I didn't want to infringe on that. And you just I'm just joining the podcast. I'm just along for the ride. Let's go.
I didn't feel like people were going to be super interested in an 0-4 FSU preview against Syracuse. I just didn't feel like that was going to move the needle. So I wanted to go more big picture, fall into some minutia as well, a little combination. Yes, Christopher?
Buy or Sinone, that's a bigger indictment on Syracuse.
Ooh. Sinone. No, it's an indictment on the 0-4 football team.
Oh.
You have anything to do. They're 0-4. They're 0-4. All right. We're going to try to make sense of all this, though. So we're going to play some Buy or Sinone. We will do a quick Syracuse preview. Christopher will gloat about a hoops commitment real quick, and that's it. We'll get out of here. It'll be a bang bang podcast today. In and out. Thanks to everyone who's listening to us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, whatnot. You could also watch us live sometimes, like this episode we were recording live. People are asking questions in the group chat. They're saying hello to us. It's fun. It's good times. You can do that on our YouTube channel. So like, subscribe, smash the subscribe button, as the kids would say. All right, let's get going. Buy or Sinone. Buy or Sinone. First one. No. Usually you're buying Buy or Sinone?
Yes.
Okay. Buy or Sinone. FSU should send every recruit a clip of Mike Norvell's passionate Monday press conference. Joshua?
It's already been done.
Yeah. It's been bought.
So it's been bought and purchased. So what you're saying is that FSU took the clip of Mike Norvell's passionate, animated Monday presser and sent it to recruits?
Yeah. I mean, I said it. I don't know if I said it on here. I think I did say it on here, but I thought it was Mike Norvell's best moment behind a microphone since he arrived at Florida State. I don't think the question was teed up for him, but I think he was prepared for the question, if that makes sense.
Chris,
I think he wanted to get that takeoff somewhere in that presser and was prepared to do so, but I don't think it was like, we know it wasn't set up.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because it was towards the very end of the press conference. He only has a 30-minute window. Like, that train does run on time. When he's done, he's done. Kenny Dillingham comes in, and then Adam Fuller comes in. It's all, like, 30 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes is how it goes. So I don't know if it was, like, maybe it was something that was on his chest, but, like, I don't think it was, like, this was a talking point that I'm going to hit today. It came off as pretty genuine and passionate. Like, he was legitimately pissed off,
which is why I think it was one of his best moments, because when you can come off passionate and genuine at the same time and be 0-4 and have a good moment like that, that means something.
I think it's the mission statement of what he's telling recruits behind the scenes. He just put it out there, broadcasted it in that view.
And I assume most of our listeners, I don't know if we should put in audio, I assume everyone's heard it up to this point, that it's a 4-minute speech. He was asked, So in the Monday press conference, Corey Clark at War Chant asked Mike about the messaging to recruits despite the 0-4 start. And Mike kind of took the initial question as just what the message is about the program at 0-4. And towards the end, about 3 or 4 minutes later, Corey came back and said, hey, not to belabor the point, but what specifically are you telling recruits right now? And that's where we got this 4-minute answer and change from Mike, in which he talked about, what were some of the key things that stood out to you, Chris, about what Mike discussed?
That it's a ground-up job, that he wants guys who want to be part of this, that they're guys who are going to commit to this, who are going to sign with this, know what they're getting into. You know, this isn't a situation like Bama with rings on rings on rings, like Elijah Pritchard cited, I guess. This is a situation where they are in a rebuild and they need guys who want to buy into said rebuild and be part of something that will be successful. But Norvell is consistent in all of his messaging that he believes he knows what he is doing, how he's going about doing it, that it's been effective in the past, and that he's going to do it here and not going to take shortcuts or change mid-route.
And he addressed, like, saying that he believes in what he's doing, but also being, to me, this is what stood out maybe more than anything else, which was being pretty transparent, saying, hey, I'm going to make mistakes. I've made some. I'll probably make more, but I'm going to respond to them. That's kind of what his whole message to his team is. I just thought it was good to be transparent. You saw him almost drop a couple curse words. He dropped pissed off, but I thought he almost was maybe an F-bomb potentially that he let out. He stopped himself. It never got there. But I thought it was a good moment in an otherwise pretty bleak year without many good moments right now. So let's move on to something else recruiting related. We're going to stick with recruiting for a few topics here for Byers-Sano. And this one comes in the wake of Elijah Pritchett, the four-star offensive tackle from Alabama, picking Alabama. No, wait, is he Georgia? He's West Georgia. He's almost Alabama. Basically Alabama. Picking Alabama over FSU. So Byers-Sano, FSU will add more freshman offensive linemen in the 2022 recruiting class than it loses from here.
Oh, okay. So they have six committed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying they're going to add three or more?
No, what I'm saying is, would they lose as many as they gain, or would they gain as many as they lose?
And it was so like specific to offensive tackles?
Offensive linemen.
Wait, what do you
offensive
mean?
Offensive linemen as well. Okay.
Offensive linemen that are on the current team or just on the commit list?
No, committed. So basically, will they have a net gain of commitments from this point?
Maybe we should have let the, maybe we should have
linemen committed. Will they finish with more than six or less than six, basically? With additions and subtractions.
We should have probably just let the users ask questions based on how bad this
probably
has been so far.
Less, but there's a reason why they took six. Like, remember at the end of the summer when everybody was saying, Josh, how are these numbers gonna work out? What about Armello? What about Pritchett? What about Eston Harris? What about this guy and that guy and that guy? And I said the numbers are going to work out. I don't just say it because it's fun to say. Like, they knew that there would be attrition on the offensive line is why they loaded up on a bunch of guys that they liked, knowing that they might lose a couple. So as of now, I would probably, I don't even know, this is a buy or Sonnen. I guess take the under. I don't even know what the question was.
By or Sonnen, FSU will add more freshman offensive linemen in the 2022 class than it loses offensive linemen in the 2022 class.
But from this point moving forward.
Yes. So if Aluba,
jeez, this was a terrible
basically
question.
If Aluba leaves for Georgia, will someone else enter the class to replace him? Do they have any other freshmen who will be committing in this class? Any 2022 kids? Jesus Christ.
I got the question. I understood it from the get-go. It's about net gains. I don't think they'll have a net gain. I think they will lose more than they gain. So I guess I am Sononing it.
Thank you, Christopher. Chris gets it. Josh is just being difficult.
I will add to this discussion. I wish there was not what seems to be sort of a lull in FSU's pursuit of Eston Harris. Florida certainly entered that picture. It's very much a Florida and Auburn battle at this point. And that just kind of disappoints me. He's a kid I like a lot. And I think he very much liked FSU early in the summer. But because of the timeline, in fact, FSU was loading up for whatever reason, it kind of it dissipated and Florida came in and took that position. So he is a guy that I think would have been a great addition down the stretch, especially if they are going to lose, you know, one, two, or three potential guys.
Josh, real quick, Dustin Wells asks on the YouTube chat here, after losing Pritchard, who's next priority offensive tackles on FSU's board? Anywhere you'd like to direct, Dustin?
I wrote a story yesterday on Knowles 24/7 about what's next for Florida State on the offensive line after the loss of Pritchett to Alabama. You know, real quick, we talked about there's two names, Julian Armella, FSU legacy down there at St. Thomas Aquinas, and Eston Harris Jr., who Chris just talked about. Right now, I don't think Florida State's in favor to land either of them. I think Armella is headed to LSU as it stands today. And I think Eston Harris, like Chris said, it's probably going to be Auburn, but I think Florida even took that second spot. So I think Florida State is probably on the outside looking in on both of these, primarily due to the 0-4 start. You know, there's just nothing else really to it. But I don't think right now that there's another name on the board that FSU's seriously pursuing. we'll see what happens once the coaching carousel heats up. You know, coaches get fired, coaches take another job, an OC here, there leaves, maybe an offensive lineman that Florida State was in love with over the summer is now available. I think that's the scenario that Florida State moves or to the transfer portal. But I do not think that we see like a name like Trent Ramsey. That's come up a lot. Everybody's asking me if FSU is involved with him. I don't see there's a guy out there that Florida State passed on over the summer that they would double back on right now.
Chris from Tyler, old Finns logo or current logo on the T?
I believe it's the old. I have several of both.
One more question with FSU recruiting on the offensive line, then we'll move on. Byers Sanone, FSU takes 3 portal transfers on the offensive line this offseason. That's from friend of the show, Ivan, who's got a couple more.
I don't know that they take 3. I definitely think they're going to go portal hunting, but they were very selective this last cycle at that position. I don't know if we see them all of a sudden become more aggressive or more laxed in the idea of who and what they'll take from that. But yeah,
were they too selective, Christopher, in hindsight? Were they too selective in the portal on offense?
That's a deeper question than we can dedicate this time to. But I mean, hindsight, without a shadow of a doubt, says they probably almost certainly needed to take at least one more body on the outside edge. And it probably wouldn't have hurt to take one more on the interior, especially with Tom Schrader not being back. So
I don't think there's any confusion that Florida State would love to have 3 quality transfer offensive linemen come in this year. That's not the question. The question is, will they? Can they find 3 that are all quality that also want to come to Florida State? That's been more of the problem than just wanting. Yes, they have been selective, you know, and I don't know if it's completely burned them. I think we're going to kind of rehash that at the midway point of the season and take a look back at some of the guys that Florida State may have passed on. But I'll take the under, just the way it's been going. Just it's been a struggle for Florida State to find and land quality offensive linemen in the portal. We've seen 2 years of Florida State really dedicating a lot of time and energy to the portal and coming away with not a whole lot, at least on the offensive line.
I'm looking forward to, as we get closer to the offseason and playing around with some of the numbers, seeing if they're going to work out, Josh, with the transfer portal and just like how much room FSU is going to have to take in the portal. Because there's probably not a whole lot of guys they're going after right now that they're going to be able to get unless they turn things around on the field. It's more about sustaining and keeping what you currently have. They may have a ton of room to add more transfers again. I don't know if that's what they're going to do or not, but I think it'll be interesting.
Tyler, as a follow-up on the logo, give me always the old one.
Old one? All right. Yeah. By Orsonone, Mackenzie Milton starts this week versus Syracuse.
Why don't you take this one, Sanone?
I'll buy.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards buy. It was a weird week. The availability of quarterbacks that could potentially start was a very mixed bag for both of them. So it's sort of a toss-up. But I know this much. Travis is still not near the 100% they need him to be from a versatile athlete standpoint for him to be ultra effective. Therefore, I would lean towards Milton.
And at this point, can we expect him to be healthy at any point moving forward, like 100% healthy?
100% healthy.
Not healthy, but healthier than he is now, yes.
I think the better question is, can you expect him to finish a game healthy?
That's my point, more or less. If he's playing his style of play.
I think the ship has sailed with us being able to confidently say, like, last year could have been a fluke. It wasn't. Like, to say that we can trust Jordan Travis, his health consistently is like the building block as QB1. It just doesn't exist right now. Byers Sanone, this is from John, friend of the show, friend of mine. Chubba Purdy plays 10 plus snaps this weekend.
I'm still Sanoning, but I think we're getting closer to that reality.
Byers Sanone, Chubba Purdy plays the next 3 games. In one of the next 3 games, he takes a snap.
I'll buy that. I think we're getting there between health of the other two and the fact that Purdy's getting more and more reps in practice as a top 2 guy. I think it's trending in that direction. They can get away with playing him in 4, so might as well get him some action. Should have got him some action in the way first game.
Well, with that in mind, Chris, one more Byerson on Chubba Purdy. Chubba Purdy should play in the next 3 games for FSU.
Well, one of those 3 is UMass, correct? Because it says UNC, UMass. So, yes, the answer is bye. Yes.
All right. By or Sanone, there will be more than two coaching changes in the offseason. This comes from Wayne. You guys know Wayne.
Wayne McGay.
I gave Wayne the platform to ask anything. He came up with some putrid questions. They're going to get more than 400.
I'll buy that. I'll buy it. It's a buy for me.
Explain yourself.
I just think Mike Norvell hasn't really stood pat with his coaching staff. What was last year the first time ever?
I believe it was, yes.
As a head coach, I think last year was the first year that he had the consecutive staff roll over. So I think there'll be some attrition. And I just think, guys taking other jobs and the coaching carousel will get moving. And I think we'll have some turnover this year.
Yeah, I think two is a good number in the sense of if you're setting a line, I'd probably lean towards buy on the number two. Everybody's so hungry for fire this guy, fire that guy right now. As we've kind of said in past pods and on message board and in articles even, we don't expect mid-season changes to happen barring a situation where basically the hand is forced.
Right. Brendan, who would be the two coaches?
First halves of the league.
Who would be the two coaches you fire after the season?
Well, we didn't say anything about firing coaches.
I'll put them on the board.
Should we put out like potential? Well, how about this? By or Sanone, Randy Shannon will be an on-field assistant next year. This is also from Ivan.
I will Sanone that. I don't think it will be at FSU. I don't think Randy's taking a lesser position at FSU, and I don't think he'd be the defensive coordinator if there were to be a change there at FSU.
Well, so I do disagree.
And some of that is personal desire. If FSU makes a change at defensive coordinator, Randy Shannon is not the person I want to be hired as defensive coordinator. And that's not supposed to be a slight against Randy or anything, but it's time for FSU to hire a big boy defensive coordinator the next time they're in that market, because that side of the ball has been a mess for a long time.
I have a weird feeling about this, but I have a feeling that I think Kevin Steele's name could be involved in this if there's a change at DC.
Put it up on the hot board. No, don't, because Adam Fuller has a job. That'd be rude. Let me ask this then. Blake Garfinkel asks, by or Sanone, Adam Fuller will be Florida State's defensive coordinator next year. I'll answer it because I know you guys don't want to, which I think is telling.
I know I want to. I just want to let you.
Sanone,
you
I don't
made
think,
it up. So
I didn't make it up. Blake asked. Sanone it. I don't think Adam Fuller's training direction to where he will be retained for the third and final year of his contract. He's allowed to turn things around, but I'm Sanone it.
Okay, that he returns. Gotcha.
That he returns, yeah.
Yeah, I've had a concern since NC State last year. Jacksonville State this year certainly didn't calm those concerns with the way that game concluded and the decisions that were made specifically by the coordinator. And, first half's like Louisville, very quickly think you have a guy who may be packing his bag. So I guess I do have to Sanone it. I just have too many doubts to be buying it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, for us to be turning our heads in the press box and asking, like, do we think he makes it out of tomorrow when it's a halftime and you've given up 300-plus yards and 31 points? Like, I think whether that's even, like, realistic or not, I know Josh said he doesn't think there'll be anything in the season that happens. Like, the fact that Chris and I are having that conversation, I think probably points to where, like, the fan base, some boosters are like that we know just how hot that seat is for him.
And when I talk about not being in the season, that's not like my personal opinion. That's not what I think should happen. That's just based on me having conversations with people behind the scenes. And I having done this for 11 years and covered coaching changes through the Fisher, the Taggart, and now Norvell, at Florida State, it's not just like Nick Saban making a decision and all of a sudden it happens. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes for changes to be made here. And typically you start to pick up on it before it actually happens. So I'm just saying that I don't think that there's a movement to make a change during the season, like we've all said. And that's just not my opinion. That's based on people within the program. But afterward, I would Sanone it.
Okay.
If things keep going the way they are.
Right.
It's not like – that's why it's hard to say we're a quarter of the way through the season. We're now a third of the way through the season. And if things keep going this way, then, yeah, there's going to be a change. That's not like a profound statement or anything.
Kind of in line with that, by or Sanone, FSU's defensive performance in the second half versus Louisville was – fool's gold. Christopher.
I'm buying that wholeheartedly.
So you're buying
it. They can go prove it to me on Saturday that it wasn't. But till they go and do that, I am buying that wholeheartedly. I think they played better. I am not trying to undermine giving them credit that they did play better. They were much better at the point of attack. Gap control was better. Spacing was better. Not allowing big plays. All those things were better. I also thought Louisville was very crappy in the second half. And not solely because of FSU's effort in doing it to them. I thought Louisville, to some degree, got complacent, lulled themselves to sleep, got away from putting the ball in the air. They had one big run down the sideline brought back by a penalty, and then they just seemed to be kind of stuck in mud. I'm not here for the comeback story of the year right now with FSU's defense.
The average air yards per attempt for Louisville in the second half was like 4.1. It was less than five. It was 4.something.
And what was it in the first half?
11.
Like, I think 11 something.
11 and change. I don't have it right in front of me, but you're talking about like a top 25 ratio versus a top or bottom, like bottom five.
I think it was 119 for the second half.
But like, so part of that can be that like FSU was dictating that too and forcing them to get rid of the ball quicker and having them in third and longs and getting pressure. They had four sacks. It could be that too. Like I'm buying that it's closer to fool's gold than it was to what this will actually see on Saturday against Syracuse. But I do think it's possible for it to be a little bit of both too. I know there's not a whole lot of
times in the last 2 years and even beyond that, has FSU taken a positive moment and built upon it?
Very rarely. Someone at the very top of that story I wrote today said, we haven't built on anything in 5 years, but here I am ready to be heard again. So Josh Byers-Sinone, that the defense better. Fool's gold.
Man, I'm going to buy it for Syracuse. For Syracuse, I'm buying.
So you're Sinoning that it's not fool's gold for 1 week, right?
Wait. Correct.
Yes.
I think they're going to come out and I think they're going to play well. There's going to be ups and downs. Like, don't get me wrong. There's going to be missed assignments that go for 75-yard touchdowns probably. But I think for the most part, you're going to see a lot of three and outs. I think you're going to see some pressure from the defensive line because we've seen that all season. And I think that's going to be enough to win this game and kind of give the defense a warm and fuzzy feel and heading into this matchup with Sam Howell and company. Then I'm not guaranteeing anything beyond
the issue for Syracuse is they've been putrid through the year this year. They've lived and died by being a good ground team. And the move to Garrett Schrader at quarterback, which we presume will continue this week, he started last week against Liberty, makes them even more ground-based team than they were. Traditionally, Dino teams are explosive and love to kill you through the air, and they get a guy like Taj Harris, you know, 7-8 catches in a game and double-digit targets in a game. That's not been the case this year. Hopefully FSU isn't the magic elixir that fixes their passing game. Hopefully
what they've done in the first four weeks
carries over to the fifth.
Danny DeVito looked like a Heisman candidate the first time he played
DeVito,
us.
Tommy DeVito, baby. Tommy DeVito was an Under Armour All-American.
I remember. He was a four-star quarterback. He was a big get for Dino.
Watching him in person and just being like, oh, my God, why is this kid at this event?
You know he's thrown for like 350 yards this season. Byers-Sinone, DeVito goes for 350 yards against FSU.
I'm not convinced DeVito plays. I think they're going to go with Schrader and try to ground and pound.
Byers-Sinone, Danny DeVito could go for 350 yards against FSU secondary right now.
Dennis asked a good question here as we're chatting a bit about Syracuse. Byers-Sinone, Sean Tucker, running back for Syracuse, second-year freshman. First running back this season that runs for 100-plus against FSU's defense. If they truly commit to running him, yes, I think he eclipses 100. I don't think it will be easy for him. I think FSU will still be good against the run, but Tucker's been a very, very productive back for them, one of the best backs in the country this year. He's also found the end zone 8 times, 7 times on the ground. He's getting it done, and they've got a very, very veteran offensive line in front of them with a boatload of start. So they got guys that can handle the moment. FSU's defensive line is their strength, but, you know, we got a couple – Fabian Lovett didn't play last week and still was limited and prepped for this game. Dennis Briggs took a cheap shot, chop block to, I think, the ankle, and that's had him very much hobbled and slowed. So that's two of your three best interior guys. So suddenly you're going with Robert Cooper beside either, you know, Jarrett Jackson or Joshua Farmer or Malcolm Ray. And while Ray played well last week and Farmer got the first taste of it, and Jackson's been serviceable as a reserve at times – none of those guys exactly inspire a great deal of confidence as a Briggs and or a Fabian Lovett would on the inside. And, you know, FSU's DNs are really good, but there's still a concern when those guys are not out there and the second team's out there, even though McClendon and Fuller have both improved and been better. There's still a concern if you're playing an 80, 90 play game against an opposition. And again, Syracuse has played much slower this year. I think they're averaging about 68 plays a game. Usually that number is much more near the 80s to even higher in the 80s, traditionally under Dino. So I'm interested to see. I'm big side.
Chris, real quick, we're going to go to Syracuse in a minute or two. We're losing Josh.
I can almost shut up, Sinone.
I can feel we're losing Sinone. Josh.
Shut up, Sinone. I'm very interested to see if Syracuse tries to get their offense going this week in the sense of doing everything they like to traditionally do. Or do they stick with just being a ground team? All right, go ahead, Sinone. That's all I had.
By or Sinone, we were losing Josh there.
Yes, certainly. Sorry, Josh.
No, I loved it.
I have to when I'm running point on this, I'm always facing the possibility of losing Joshua and something to be.
I really enjoy just being along for the ride and not leading the show. So I'm having a blast this podcast.
Go pour some more tea. It was Grassino, by the way, who said we've got to see FSU build on anything. We've yet to see FSU build on anything. Excuse me, but here I am, ready and willing to get hurt again. By or Sinone, Ivan will get drunk off 1.5 beers again this weekend. I'm not going to actually. He was drunk texting me hardcore off some Natty Light. This was from Bud. Bud Elliott, maybe you guys have heard of him. Kind of a big deal on the FSU podcast market. By or Sinone, Mike Norvell and staff were realistic enough in talking to recruits, administrators, and boosters about expectations for this team.
I'm buying that. I mean, based on conversations we had with them in the offseason that we've had with people that they had conversations with at all those levels. Yeah, they were realistic. Now 0-4 isn't the realism they were selling, and they'd tell you that too. But they were realistic that it was going to be a struggle and that there were certain areas where things had to go really well for them to maximize their potential success. And I think it's fair to say O-line, for example, hasn't gone really well for them. There's been a lot of injuries there. They've been banged up. Quarterback hasn't been near as good. I think if you had them write down on paper what they expected out of quarterback position exiting the preseason, specifically pertaining to Jordan Travis, it would have been much more glowing reviews than what it has been through four games.
No, we lied to everyone. Jordan Travis was not good in preseason practice. We just lied about it.
So far, I'm buying Bud's question so far. I think that if the message was not delivered the way that it was throughout the offseason, I don't think this class would have maintained through Jacksonville State. I think if Coach Norvell and his staff were out there telling these guys that, hey, we're going to keep this thing rolling and we're back to a bowl this year, we think 8, 9, 10 wins is doable, then the recruits would have seen that and said, man, these guys are full of it after two games and said, I'm out. And that would have been their breaking point. I think because of the message that was delivered, the breaking point was hired or raised. I don't know what you want to call it. So that means, do these recruits have a breaking point? Is it true that Florida State could lose every single game and Mike Norvell's message is going to hold steady? We don't know that. There could become a breaking point. But through four games, Florida State still maintains their commitments. Not one recruit has strayed. Not one recruit has put out a letter respecting his decision. And so far, I mean, how can you not say that Mike Norvell and staff delivered the right message throughout the offseason?
The cracks haven't even been that bad yet to this point. I mean, Baugh's taking visits elsewhere. I think he's supposed to be at Georgia this weekend.
But like you said on the message board, Georgia's interest in communication with Baugh
has been new.
Exactly the same as it was in June, as it is right now. People are just noticing it more because Florida State's 0-4 and Georgia's beating the crap out of people.
Yeah, and there's Tay Woody, Auburn, Travion Williams with the two in-state Mississippi schools, and now LSU trying to jump in the water and get involved in that and get them on campus this weekend. So, I mean, there is stuff to keep an eye on that's concerning.
Definitely.
But there's nobody that we feel like is on the verge of flipping or who basically has commit before their name right now who is not really committed.
And there's also nothing you can do to stop decommitments. Literally nothing you can do. And I always bring up the example of DeMarcus Walker's recruitment. He was committed to Alabama. Alabama won the national championship. In the night that they were celebrating, DeMarcus Walker decommitted from Alabama and commits to Florida State. So that just shows you, like, no matter what you do, you're going to get decommitments. It just happens. It's part of recruiting. So the fact that Florida State hasn't even had any and they've suffered through 0-4, bravo.
And Walker, one of my favorite. Just add to Josh's, to add to Josh's story on Walker, number one reason he came here was Jeremy Pruden's relationship with him. So it's still a relationship-based business at the end of the day.
A great dirty recruiting story was Jeremy Pruitt taking to Marcus Walker and like hiding him in a house for about a week and a half so Saban couldn't get a hold of him. But, you know, rules are rules. There were no rules broken. It was a little dirty, but hey, nothing illegal. You're allowed to do that. All righty. I think so. I think you're allowed to do that. I don't know. Does FSU have Travis Hunter in a bunker somewhere, just like hidden underneath some mountain in Georgia? Just like no one talked to him right now.
Travis Hunter is the bunker.
One more buyer Sinone from Wayne. Buyer Sinone, FSU will call a design quarterback run with McKenzie Milton on fourth down more than once over the last eight games.
I'm buying it.
Buy. Hard buy.
Straight Wayne. Up. Double down on that buy. It's just going to happen. It's not funny.
If he's the quarterback, the quarterback's going to run.
They're
1-for-9
on fourth down conversions this season.
It was interesting that Mike talked about maybe changing that up a little bit. I know they go with the analytics and whatnot, but sometimes your personnel dictates, you know, just because the numbers always say like, this is what, and I'm a proponent of going with the numbers cause I'm a nerd, but if they're accounting for, hey, 50% of the time, this is going to be successful. 60% of the time going on fourth down here is going to lead to better success. That's not accounting for your offensive line being half destroyed right now. So
yeah, as little as I trust in the defense, I still think if you're on the long side of the field, you probably should be punting it unless you're literally at the middle of the field.
It's probably not helping with the defense, you know, giving up a lot of points either. That yeah. may not be play. It plays it to itself sometimes. Buyer Sinone, I had a dream last night that Kurt Weiler from Tallahassee Democrats stole my car, drove it in backwards on the highway to get soft serve ice cream.
I'll buy that because I'm pretty sure you had that dream.
I did. It's true. It's accurate. It happened. I don't know why Kurt would do that to me. Alrighty, that's it for Buyer Sinone. Let's get into the Syracuse preview real quick. Josh, don't go anywhere because we're going to need to get a prediction.
I was about to leave.
Nope, you can't. Actually, real quick, before we get to Syracuse prediction, hoops commitment, Chris. Hoops commitment, then we'll get Syracuse, then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, they added Tom House, talented kid from Ohio. They view him as a shooter type. A little bit of athleticism mixed in there. He officially visited last weekend, pretty much committed while on the visit. He chose FSU over Georgia and a bevy of other lower-level offers after that. He's a kid that's risen a bit since the summer months. They're trying to build that class. He's the second commitment in that class. That class can start signing in mid-November. Their hope is to add a guy like a Dylan Mitchell or Julian Phillips here in the coming month leading up to signing day to kind of bulk that class up some. But FSU has done a very good job over the years of him of recruiting guys for specific reasons, you know, fit a certain role on a team. It's not about being a super well-rounded, do everything kind of player. It's a guy who can knock down a shot or effectively clean up around the rim, things of that sort. House to me was taken to be an effective outside shooter whose game may continue to develop because he is still generally new to focusing solely on hoops. So good take in the sense of they liked him a lot. They wanted him. They kind of latched on the last 2-3 weeks, you know, got that ball rolling, and here we are. He's committed.
Okay, let's get to FSU versus Syracuse. FSU is 0-4. Syracuse coming down to Doak Campbell Stadium on Saturday, 3:30 p.m. at 3-1. Just got a nice win against a strong group of five program in Liberty. What channel is it going to be on? I'm looking.
ACC Network.
Oh, good. Some fun commercials for the people at home.
No Roddy Jones, though. I know people didn't like Roddy Jones last time he did an FSU game. So this is the other crew.
Hey, it's all good. I didn't lose Josh on the soft serve ice cream question. I lost
Josh. Loves
Josh. I lost Josh when Chris talked about Syracuse game strategy for 4 minutes straight. What are you, Mike Norvell, talking about something 4 minutes straight? His was much more passionate and effective. Christopher.
I'm sorry I didn't get more passionate about the orange.
All right, real quick, let's get into the orange. Their offense, like you said, they've made a change at quarterback in the last week to really kind of emphasize the ground game. So what works about Syracuse's offense? And then real quick, it's defense as well, and then we'll do a prediction and get out of here.
Yeah, the number 20 rushing offense in the country that's led by running back Sean Tucker. Tucker is averaging 134 per game on the ground, 6.46 per rush, which is 24th in the nation. He ranks 5th in the nation with 7 rushing touchdowns and 3rd with 12 points per game. He has 8 total touchdowns on the year. His 48 points are 4th in the nation. As a whole, they're not very good offensively in general outside of Tucker. They're only averaging 30.5 points per game, and some of that's inflated by the game against Albany where they ran their stats up to some degree. That's 61st in the nation overall. The passing attack, you know, they've used two quarterbacks this year. They've used DeVito up until recently, and that became Schrader. Schrader is a bit more of a bulky, capable rushing guy. I think he only threw for about 70 yards against Liberty. 6'4", 230, former Mississippi State quarterback. He is a very capable runner. He can be a difficult guy for FSU in that sense of giving him kind of a dual threat, both at that position and with him and Tucker. The passing attack on the year, 176.2 per game through the year. That's 108th in the country, not very good. Taj Harris is very good, one of the better receivers. Dino has traditionally had one of the best receivers in the league every year from a statistical standpoint. This year, he only played in three games for them. He has 151 career receptions, averaged 4.14 receptions per every game played throughout his career. That number is more in the 6-7 range over the last year and a half now, dating back to the start of last season. Defensively, Norvell, I believe, or maybe it was Kenny Dillingham, one of them earlier in the week brought up, the DC there is the same person FSU faced at Arizona State in the Sun Bowl. If you remember that game, James Blackman had a horrendous day. FSU as a whole gave it away a good bit. They're going to create havoc. They're going to come downhill. They're going to be aggressive. Sonona's talking, but yet he's on mute.
I was saying that was Deontay Sheffield and Trayshawn Ward's coming out party.
Okay.
Deontay Sheffield no longer with the program. Trayshawn Ward, king of the spring, balling for the program.
If I had to single out a single player for them, I'd probably go with Cody Roscoe. It's kind of funny because he's actually technically a reserve on the depth chart. Team leader in sacks with 5.5, tackles for loss with 8, 21 tackles on the season. Them as a defense as a whole have been very good. They rank second in the nation in sacks, averaging 4.5 per game. That's 18 through 4 games. And in one of those games, they actually had 0 sacks, so basically 18 in 3 games. Again, Albany helps that stat some. Albany game makes some of their stats a little unbalanced. Third in the nation in tackles for loss, 9.8 per game. I just think that stuff kind of points to the fact that they like creating havoc. They're going to get down on you. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to try to end plays in the backfield, given that may leave some things to be attacked vertically. They rank 10th in the nation in total defense, second in the league, allowing just 261.2 yards per game. 85.2 rushing per game is 18th in the nation. 176 passing per game is 28th in the nation. So they've been good against both. Again, you got to take into the opponent, the calibration of the opponents. But Liberty, very, very good offense, high octane, usually does a good job. They did a very good job against them last Friday. They've also had an additional day to prepare for FSU. It's weird. Dino's teams usually play really, really fast. And this year, to go back to that previous discussion, 64.5 plays per game. I would be willing to bet that's about 20 down from his career average at Syracuse. I think he's lived around 85 most of his time there. 28 minutes per game with time of possession, which is slower ball for them. They're usually, you know, hit it big, go quick, put our defense on the field too much this year. It's been a little bit of the opposite. 13 rushing touchdowns on the season, just 2 passing touchdowns as a team. They, despite the havoc they create on defense, they haven't created a lot of turnovers. They're 96 in turnover margin at negative 0.50 through 4 games. They've gained 3 turnovers, 2 fumble recoveries, which is somewhat luck, and 1 interception. And they've given it away, I believe it's 4 times in those games. Or, I'm sorry, 5 times in those games. 3 interceptions and a pair of lost fumbles. Only other player I'd mention is linebacker Mykel Jones. I believe he was at Clemson before.
That sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. He's a good tackler for him. He's one of those guys that will clean things up when the havoc doesn't happen in the backfield. So he's kind of a name to know.
Okay, Christopher, you were the only one of us three who got your prediction correct last week. Josh stole my thunder there when I was trying to get creative and pick. Well, at the time, wasn't
rode my wave.
That's not what happened. It was the opposite. You rode my wave. So, Chris, I will give you the honors of doing your score prediction first.
Because FSU has been so good at run defense and Syracuse has been so run heavy, I think I'm leaning towards FSU, but I'm hesitant. The spread's what, 4.5 to 5.5 FSU's favor, I believe it is.
It opened up at 5 and change. Hang on, let me look. Or was it 6?
When I
it
looked at Sportsline this morning, I saw 4.5 to 5.5.
Okay, which is kind of initially the initial movement. I don't think it's moved a ton since
I think it will be a very tight game. I'm very uncomfortable, truthfully, picking either team. I don't think either team's particularly very good at a lot of things. Little worried about FSU's O-line being banged up. You know, even though Scott's probably back and Smith's making a go of it and going to try, I think they still have, you know, those two are both banged up. Other guys are banged up. That group just is not healthy and has not been healthy. So a team creating havoc against that concerns me. Hell, I'll go FSU 26-25. Like, I just – I'm super – I'm not confident either way. I think FSU will play a little bit better as a whole in the sense of not being their own worst enemy. And Syracuse racks up penalties like a crazy man. They're one of the most highly penalized teams in the country. So, you know, I think that's an area FSU can actually have an advantage. So, yeah, FSU, but I don't feel very good about it. Flip a coin. That's basically how I feel.
Okay, got a tepid coin flip from Christopher. Josh, you hung around for this moment. What do we got here? FSU, Syracuse, score prediction.
Florida State 29, Syracuse 21.
Wow. So I predicted an FSU loss with my Q&A with Stephen Bailey, so I'm going to stick with it over Q's Nation, 24/7 Sports affiliate. I'm going to stick with it. Syracuse 31. FSU 28. But here's what I will say. I'm going to do my part for an FSU win. They're 0-4 this season. And I think I know why, guys. Since we've gone to this whole YouTube video thing, I try to class it up and wear my 24/7 Sports t-shirt. And I haven't recorded any pods with the tank top. That's right. Tank top Thursday is going to break the curse. Throwing my loss prediction out the window. FSU 31, Syracuse 28. Knowles win.
I might change my prediction Syracuse tomorrow.
Syracuse won 62-24 against Albany, but you can throw that game out to a slight degree because, well, it's Albany. Liberty, they won 24-21. Rutgers, they lost 17-7. Ohio, they won 29-9. So you're expecting them to score more points than they have in those three games.
FSU or Syracuse? Sorry, my dog was here.
Syracuse. Wait.
I mean, I'm not buying in that this is a defensive revival by Florida State by any means.
All right. How about we predict Miami, Virginia plays tonight, and then UF Kentucky is also this weekend. You guys got any thoughts on that?
I think UF beats Kentucky. I don't think they have a hangover effect. And I think Richardson is supposed to be healthy for that game, so that helps him at the quarterback position. Miami, Virginia is a tough one because, man, those two defenses, they both stink. I mean, Virginia's giving up touchdowns every damn time they go on the field, and Miami doesn't like tackling. So,
and they're back in Miami again for this
one. It's at Miami. I'll give Miami the slight edge because I think they're pretty desperate right now that they really need one, that they need to.
But is D.R. King playing tonight?
Back on the tracks. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Buddy, I'm covering a bad football program right now. I don't have time to pay attention to a second.
Buyers. No, I'm just kidding.
He'll be back for the top FSU's ready to play him. He'll be 100% by then is how this program's luck goes. Lane Kiffin is a win against Alabama away from being able to call his shot. Like, I think he's already in a great position. If he wants a good job, he could get a better job, I should say. But he's about to be able to call a shot if they upset Alabama and his offense goes and hangs 40 points, 50 points on him.
Basically saying Lane Kiffin for USC again.
I was going to say Miami.
I don't think Miami – like, I think right now Miami could maybe have a chance at him. I think if he wins, I think he could be – if he wins and then that turns into – you know, Ole Miss winning 10, 11 games this year. If he beats Alabama, he'll be able to call a shot. He'll be above Miami.
I don't think Miami's in the position to poach a successful coach. I just personally like the fit of Lane Kiffin.
Oh, I do too.
Miami.
I do too. I was on Bianchi's radio show during the FSU's coaching search, and he had asked about Lane Kiffin coming to FSU, end up hiring Mike Norvell. And my response was, in hindsight, maybe I shouldn't have dismissed Lane Train.
I love watching that offense. Now, he doesn't really give a flip about defense, but, you know, I still think Alabama wins. But I am interested. I'm also interested in Georgia-Arkansas because while Georgia's defense is unbelievably ferociously good, Sam Pittman against his old club is going to be an interesting one to watch.
Kendall Briles is a win away from being able to become a head coach, I think.
Georgia Southern?
I mean, those Georgia Southern cats are weird. They want you to run the triple option, and if you do anything differently, they turn on you so fast.
I'm interested, though, if they want to stick to that.
The boosters, they've tried going away from it before, and when it goes bad quickly there, like, they turn away from that coach. They turn their backs on them. They have their identity.
Paul Johnson is back tour.
Oh, Alex Atkins' name. Georgia Southern hot boards, guys.
Josh, get on
that. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. No, I mean, Alex Atkins' time will come, but it's just, it's not, this isn't the job and this isn't the time.
All right.
When Alex Atkins earns his next job, he will truly have earned it. Because this thing is a task for him.
Yeah.
All right. For Josh Neuber, Chris Nee, I'm Brendan Sinone. This has been On the Bench. Fourth or fifth time to sit on the bench. Thanks for everyone watching. See you guys next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.